Hi, this is Shelby LaPree, station manager of Radio Power. Radio Power is an independent progressive radio network that is entirely funded by listener donations. As you know, for the last 2 weeks we've been having our spring pledge drive, and I'm pleased to report that we have raised 80% of our goal. To those of you who have made donations over the last 2 weeks, I'd like to thank you personally for supporting Radio Power. For those of you who have not yet made a donation, I urge you to make a donation on today, the final day of our pledge drive. As I mentioned, we have an individual donor who has pledged to match dollar for dollar every donation that we bring into Radio Power. This means that if you make a $20 donation, we will get a $40 matching donation. If you make a $50 donation, we will get a $100 matching donation. And if you make a $100 donation today, we will get a $200 matching donation. This is an incredible opportunity for us to raise the capital that we need to operate for the next 3 months. And I'm asking you to please help us take advantage of it. As I said, we've raised 80% of our goal, and I'm looking to raise the other 20% today. This is the final day of our pledge drive. This is a community-based radio station. In other words, if you make a few hundred dollars a week, make a $5 donation. If you make $500 a week, make a $50 donation. If you're fortunate enough that you make $75,000 or $100,000 a year, then make a couple $100 donation to support free speech and liberal progressive talk shows here on Radio Power. We are entirely listener-funded. That means that we do not accept any corporate advertising, no government subsidies. We are completely independent. And this allows us to bring you the hard-hitting liberal talk shows like Tom Hartman, Mark Levine, Tony Trupiano, Peter Werby, Guy James, and so many other great programs that we bring you on a daily basis. The majority of the money that we have to spend to operate goes to bandwidth, and we use a tremendous amount of bandwidth streaming these live programs to 20, 30, 40,000 listeners a day. So we are getting the message out to 30, 40,000 listeners a day. And this is a tremendous public service that I'm asking you to support right now. Please go to our website right now. Just stop what you're doing, take 5 minutes, and go to radiopower.org and click on the donations link. There you'll find that you can make a donation via any major credit card, an electronic check, or PayPal. It's all secure. It'll take about 5 minutes to do. Again, our website is radiopower.org, and click on the donations link. Your donations go directly to supporting our network. There's no, we don't waste money anywhere. It goes to servers, it goes to syndication fees, it goes to administration costs, and we are a very efficiently run operation here. And every dollar that you donate goes directly to expanding our network capacity. And as you know, Radio Power is one of the cutting-edge stations that focuses on liberal progressive issues. And I'd like to thank you for supporting our network. This is Shelby LaPree, station manager, thanking you for listening to Radio Power.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media is not reporting. And all this week, we're having kind of a different way of looking at it. Normally, we talk about the facts and all that's going on in Washington. But today, I think it's important, and I've thought it's important all this week, to talk about why people think the way they do. Not just that they do, not just the facts, but in fact why it is that Red America, the America that votes for George Bush, that votes Republican, why they think the way they do. And so we've been exploring, well, the philosophy, if you will, of Red and Blue America. And to do that, I have written a poem. Okay, it's not something I normally do, but, you know, longtime listeners, you've heard me try to sing. You've heard me have great guests. Well, now I'm actually involved in poetry. And it's on my website. Feel free to pass it along. It's radioinsidescoop.com. And it's called Reflections on Red and Blue America. And hopefully it will be provocative. It might, in fact, upset some conservatives. In fact, I already have one that's written in. Doesn't like it very much. And that's why I'm inviting on the air a friend of mine who is a conservative who I'm sure will not be a big fan of the poem. His name is Jeff Meredith. He works with the Young Americas Foundation. And he's going to come on air in just a few minutes after I read the poem to talk with me about it. And, of course, you are also always welcome to participate. All you have to do is call in at radioinsidescoop.com, marketradioinsidescoop.com, that's the email, or you can call at 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Emails are already coming in, I can see that. Okay, let's read the poem, Reflections on Red and Blue America. And I should say, by the way, before I read it, that I've had at least one person point out that the beginning of the poem, which is conservatives love America like mommy or daddy, is something that Al Franken wrote in his book, Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. That's true. I give credit where credit's due. I've kind of riffed off it a bit. And I hope you'll enjoy the poem. And call in and tell me whether you think it's right, wrong, you agree, or disagree. Here we go. Conservatives love America like mommy or daddy. Unconditionally, right or wrong. Liberals love America like husband or wife, an object of affection and sometimes disappointment. Conservatives love their country like they love God. America is all perfect, all powerful. Conservatives must constantly reference God, cling to God on our money and our Pledge of Allegiance. The word makes it true. To suggest that America is not perfect is to suggest God is not perfect. It is heresy. It must be rooted out. Whatever is right. Liberals love their country like they love God, as a source of comfort and strength. America is not perfect and all-powerful. God is not perfect and all-powerful. Liberals struggle with a perfect God. How can God be perfect when there is so much suffering in the world? How can America be perfect if its faults and failures are plain to see? Whatever is can be made better. To a conservative, a Republican president, like the Pope of Catholic doctrine, is infallible. He never makes mistakes. God chose him, and God doesn't make mistakes. It does not matter that the American people elected someone else. The Supreme Court follows God's will. God trumps democracy. We have no God but America, and Bush is his prophet. To a liberal, leaders make mistakes. Like a husband or wife. Love, yes, but watch carefully with open eyes, because trust flows from respect. Work to keep the marriage strong, but sue for divorce if you must. Don't love America right or wrong. Love America because it is right, when it is right, when it lives up to its promise of liberty and justice for all. Conservatives believe in easy choices, guns and butter. Buy now, pay later. War and prosperity. You don't like Saddam? Remove him. America, like God, is all-powerful. Liberal democracy will spring up in Iraq without irony, like fallow soil just waiting to be plowed. They will greet us with flowers and candy. Liberals believe in tough choices. Sacrifice tax cuts to preserve Social Security. If you go to war in Iraq, you will divert troops from capturing bin Laden. You will allow nuclear weapons in North Korea and Iran. If God cannot do it all, then America cannot do it all, even with a draft. Why does the world hate us so? Conservative leaders believe in two Americas. They don't have to fight wars. We do. They don't have to pay taxes. We do. They don't have to struggle to get jobs. We do. They don't get punished for using drugs. We do. They have deferments and loopholes and daddy's friends and lawyers. We do not. Liberals believe in one America. One law, one rule should apply to all. Rich and poor, black and white. Those who fight wars, pay taxes, struggle to get jobs, and are punished for using drugs are the real Americans, God's suffering servants. Conservatives believe the Constitution is perfect because it reflects majority American values, because the founders themselves were perfect. Liberals believe the Constitution is perfect because it protects minority American freedoms, because it can be amended. Conservatives will fight and risk death for their country. Witness hero John McCain. Liberals will fight and risk death for their country. Witness hero John Kerry. But liberals will speak out against their country. Do they love their country more than conservatives because they risk abuse to tell their country when they think it's wrong? Witness hero John Kerry. Well, that's my poem. Like it or not, I'd be curious to know what you think about it. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Call in 877-57-SCOOP or send me an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. I now want to invite my guest on air. It's Jeff Meredith of the Young Americas Foundation. My guest says he's not a big fan of my poetry, but we will find out. Jeff, thanks very much for coming on the Inside Scoop.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Your poem is interesting to say the least, but, you know, as a friend, I have to admit, I'm a little disappointed.
Okay.
And, you know, I know you beyond this, and to see this just dramatic stereotyping and this leftist arrogance, I thought you were above it. I thought you were above saying some of these things, like conservatives believe that America is like God, or is to suggest it's not perfect is to suggest God is not perfect, things like that, you know, that are just so broad, or to say that conservatives believe in just easy choices that are so broad.
Well, we'll go at it. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that not all conservatives are alike, and that this was obviously – it was written in poetic form, because I'm not claiming that all conservatives. I'm trying to give a way to think about things. And my problem, I guess, that I see with a lot of conservative thinkers is they suggest that if you criticize what the president is doing or you criticize what America is doing, that you don't love America. And you wouldn't agree with that, would you?
No, absolutely not. I don't agree with that. What conservatives, I think, believe is that liberals, it seems, every time they're being patriotic, in their own words, are attacking our nation. You always say it's my patriotic duty to stand up against this war. It's always some kind of patriotic duty that somehow puts America down. We never see you guys standing up for our nation.
But, well, I certainly, on 9/11, I think you can agree that liberals and conservatives and all Americans stood together in anguish and agony and horror at what happened.
Because for a day or two until you found a way to start trying to blame President Bush for 9/11.
Well, that came out with new evidence of that. But, in the Clinton era, conservatives were always complaining about President Clinton did this, President Clinton did that. I think the difference is that liberals understood that criticism of a president's policies, if not his private sex life, is proper. It's perfectly proper. It is patriotic. Why is it that when we attack President Bush's policies or the government's policies, you say that we're down on America?
All right, well, let me be clear. That's not at all what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think President Bush has found a lot of heat in the conservative movement, and deservedly so. Now, I admit that I voted for the guy, but I am not a big fan at all. And, in fact, when I don't know if you want to take your poem verse by verse or whatnot, but when you mentioned that in the eyes of a conservative, a Republican president is perfect or infallible, that just made me laugh hysterically, because there's only one Republican president that I can even think of that I like in the last 50 years, and that's Ronald Reagan.
Okay, but what we see when we look at all the radio shows, when we look at Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or any of the people that are spouting conservative doctrine, you know, Gus Savage, all the radio hosts, all the people on TV, Robert Novak, any of them, anything they say on Fox News, it's always, the government can do no wrong.
Well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned Robert Novak, because he was a staunch opponent of the war. But that being said, I listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity when I do get the chance, which isn't every day, just like I like to listen to you, too. And the bottom line is they haven't been big fans of a lot of Bush's policies, and I can easily name three or four for you. The amnesty issue, the farm bill, the steel tariffs, the education bill. So, I mean, the list goes on and on. The incredible spending. These are not conservative principles.
But they're attacking him from the right. My point is this. My point is that it really has to do with – my poem came out of – the criticism that conservatives often make about liberals to suggest that our critique is somehow anti-American. And I got to tell you, Jeff, you and I both do a lot of these debates in front of high school kids. In fact, that's how I met Jeff. We debated liberal-conservative debates before a couple hundred high school kids in the Close-Up Foundation. And what I find is that the conservatives that come up to me, they're not giving arguments. They're not giving rationales. They're simply saying, it's right. It's right because I say it's right, because Bush says it's right. They're not giving critiques. And that's, I guess, where I started
out
the poem.
Well, I think that's just not true. I think it's kind of naive to say every conservative student is so stupid that all
I'm
they
not
can
saying
argue
every
is that
conservative
it's
student.
Right because we say it's right. Can, you know, no reputable person ever would use that or as a formulation of an argument.
Can you agree with me that dissent, that disagreeing with what your government is doing, is patriotic and is in fact is a good thing for people in the country to do?
Absolutely, as long as we can also establish the fact that sometimes the government is right and sometimes
it's right. No, absolutely, sometimes it's right. But I got to tell you,
is wrong.
But with George Bush in his recent press conference, when people brought up the analogy of Vietnam, he said not only that it was false, which is his right to say whether it's true or false and make his arguments. He went further than that. He said it helps the enemy. We heard people say, General Myers say he didn't want us to bring up the abuse and torture of Iraqi prisoners by Americans. He wanted to delay the report for several weeks because it helps the enemy. And it seems to me that a lot of conservatives are saying that when we liberals or moderates or even conservatives criticize the government, that somehow we're helping the enemy. You wouldn't make that argument, would you?
That depends. If you're saying criticizing the government, I think that's completely legitimate. When you go and you criticize our troops, I think that's a big problem. Now,
well, what about when our troops are doing wrong?
Let's talk about. Do you mind talking about Kerry a little bit?
Not at all.
Because you bring it up later in the poem. Kerry came back from Vietnam,
right?
And he accused his fellow soldiers of raping, murdering, torturing, things that frankly,
that some of them did,
and he admitted doing it himself, which I find ironic.
He didn't admit to raping, torturing, and murdering.
He said he participated in it, and he didn't report it, and that is illegal.
What he said was there were what he called atrocities. Later he said that was not a word he would use 30 years later.
But it still stood what he said.
But it was things like free fire zones and things that absolutely he thought was wrong. And I think it takes excessive bravery, even more than fighting for your country in a foreign land, to come home and dare to criticize your country and risk really incredible abuse.
Well, I think it would have taken a lot more bravery to stand up to these problems when he was there fighting them instead of coming home to a fawning liberal media where
he was
immediately made a hero
liberal
of the anti-war movement.
Well, I don't know about a fawning liberal media.
Let me get back to my original point real quick. Now, there was the General Giap, I think that's how you say his name, of Vietnam, General Vo Nguyen Giap, in his memoirs, in his autobiography, credited people like John Kerry and the anti-war movement with helping North Vietnam defeat America in that war. That is from the enemy themselves, saying that these fifth columns in America do indeed provide morale for the enemy.
Okay, but Jeff, do you see the problem with this? I mean, we can go in tomorrow and we can invade Albania or Canada or Mexico or Japan, right? We invade a country and then we say anyone who criticizes our invasion not only is not supporting our troops, they're helping the enemy. And indeed they are, because anyone who suggests that a war we conduct is wrong, right? That obviously helps the people we're fighting against. So if we go in tomorrow and invade Albania, and I'm just picking that because it's a random country, and then people stand up and say, you know what, why are we invading Albania? It makes no sense. They didn't attack us. They're not a danger to us. Then they'll say, aha, you're helping the Albanians, just like you're helping the North Vietnamese. To me, it takes courage, extreme courage, more so even than to fight in battle and come home and then say, you know what, I don't want to be the last man to die for a worthless cause.
Well, I think the problem is, of course, that we haven't invaded Albania or any of these other nations.
No, we invaded Iraq.
And the thing is that the war in Iraq is a legitimate war.
What makes it legitimate? Why did we go to Iraq? And by the way, let me give out the numbers again. 877-57-SCOOP if you want to challenge Jeff or me. Go ahead. Why did we invade Iraq?
Well, to try and keep this from becoming a massive debate on Iraq, I'll give you four quick reasons. First of all, the treaties that Saddam Hussein signed when the first Gulf War ended that would allow inspectors at all times that he then booted out, the threat of chemical weapons.
Okay, he booted out and then he allowed back in before we went in, and the United Nations, which enforces these treaties, didn't want to go. All right, number two.
The United Nations did not enforce any of the treaties. America enforced the treaties.
Who are the treaties with?
Be clear on that.
Who are the treaties with?
The treaties were with the United Nations.
Exactly. Thank you.
America still had to enforce them because we were the ones who were going to suffer if they weren't.
Who said that we were supposed to enforce them? I mean, did the United Nations make us the world policemen?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
Look, Saddam was the one who invaded Kuwait. We forced him out
with
a broad coalition.
Yes, he did.
The UN passed 17 resolutions against Saddam and did not have the spine to ever enforce a single one of them.
And 13 years ago we went to war. But my question is, why are we going to war now when Saddam was fully contained? Give me your other three reasons.
All right. Next reason, the possibility of chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons.
Possibility.
Without inspectors there, we had no way of knowing. And frankly, we've been looking for the chemical weapon, these weapons of mass destruction, for a shorter time than it found Hillary Clinton to find the Rose Law Firm records. So I think
that we can spend a little bit
more time looking.
Cheap shot, but of course, George Bush did not want the inspectors in there. In fact, not only did he not allow the UN inspectors in there, he kicked them out. He kicked them out so our inspectors could go in there. Some suggest it's to plant evidence. I don't know.
Well, it hasn't happened, so they're pretty lousy at it if that's what they're doing.
Well, I hope they don't. They shouldn't. But in any case, they haven't found it. So the possibility of weapons of mass destruction clearly was not right. And as I mentioned on the show yesterday, it's written in Bob Woodward's book, and George Bush hasn't denied it. In fact, he's the one who gave Bob Woodward a three-hour interview, that when George Tenet brought him all the evidence the CIA had of weapons of mass destruction, George Bush himself said, "Is that all you got?" So even George Bush didn't think there was enough evidence, at least privately. That's not what he told us publicly. But give us your two other reasons.
All right. Well, let me just address that really quickly, too.
Okay.
First of all, Woodward's book has, what, one quoted source? So much of it, he refuses to name any sources. It's not reputable, and that's my opinion.
Simple.
And that's what every conservative is going
to
believe.
That's easy. If Bush could say, I didn't say that. All he has to say is Bob
every single accusation made at him. It would be a full-time job.
Well, when he gives a three-hour interview with a reporter, and the reporter reports what Bush said, and if he gets it wrong, I would think Bush would say, "Hey, you got it wrong." But okay, go ahead. What are your next 2 points?
All right, next point is the terrorists operating in Iraq. And we've caught a bunch, and most recently in the last week, this character, al-Zarqawi, was found to be working in Iraq before the American invasion and planning a massive chemical weapon attack in Jordan, where up to 80,000 people could have been killed. There was also
There are also more terrorists in Syria, more in Saudi Arabia, more in. I mean, my point in my poem is that conservatives don't believe in hard choices. All right, I mean, it's right there in the poem. It says you don't like Saddam, remove him, and it says But liberals understand that if you do that, you divert troops from capturing bin Laden, you allow nuclear weapons in North Korea and Iran. To me, conservatives are living in a dream world. The whole idea that Iraq, they will greet us with flowers and candy. I mean, that was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Well, I don't think that was our battle strategy, to be greeted by flowers and candy.
Well, it was Dick Cheney's strategy.
Why you would say removing Saddam was an easy decision. I think Bush has, you know, bet his presidency on that. I refuse to grant that. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think you, as a liberal, would support invasions of Iran or North Korea either, would you?
More so than Iraq.
But you
They're
would.
More
Let's
dangerous.
Be here. Let's be honest. There's not a single
Actually, North Korea,
liberal
I,
in the Senate or the House that's calling for war with North Korea.
But you know why? Because we don't have the troops. How about using our troops to capture bin Laden? Everyone supposedly supports that, but we have diverted tens of thousands of troops to Iraq. We have taken special forces out of Afghanistan. They're going back to the Taliban. If there's one thing I thought all Americans could agree on September 12th, is that we've got to get bin Laden. We've got to get the Taliban. Can't you agree that that's more important than Iraq?
Mark, of course I agree with that, but you are demonstrating a profound misunderstanding of what America's military is capable of. And to say that we need our entire military to chase one man and his roving group of bandits is absurd.
It's not one man,
America's
it's an organization.
America's
military
is able to fight two distinct and separate wars on two fronts.
How about three? How about four? Don't you think North Korea is more dangerous than Iraq? That's my point about hard choices, Jeff.
But
that's
you don't
exactly
support
my
that
point.
War either. You're just using that as a red herring
no,
to stop this one.
I'll tell you the war I support right now. I support sending troops to stop the genocide in Sudan. I think that's more important than anything Saddam Hussein has done. and I don't think it would be that hard or that costly. I support sending more troops to Afghanistan to go and attack and root out bin Laden.
Well, you go against
I support being stronger against...
He hasn't asked for more troops. They have what they need.
Oh, yeah, don't give me he hasn't asked.
Given it.
General Shinseki in Iraq asked for more troops, and he was pilloried by Don Rumsfeld and everyone else, and now we find out we need more troops. Afghanistan, as I did a show on just last week, is going back to the Taliban. It's going back to the enemy. We definitely, and we know that any general who dares to ask for more troops, if he's not allowed to, is going to get in trouble. That's what happened with Eric Shinseki. So don't blame the generals. Come on, Jeff.
As far as I understand, was Shinseki actually stationed in Iraq? Was he not stationed in America?
And he was in charge of looking at troops in Iraq. And he said
we
need...
He was not even in Iraq. He wasn't involved in the intricate details of the war planning.
Sure
General
he was.
Tommy Franks was. And if General Tommy Franks had asked for more troops, he would have been given them.
Okay,
Shinseki,
so why was Shinseki right?
In charge of that.
Why was Shinseki right and all our generals on the ground who knew better than to speak out? How come they were wrong?
How are you saying that they're wrong?
Well, they didn't... they said Wolfowitz testified we would need a few thousand troops. He would never need 100,000 troops.
Wolfowitz is not a general.
He's in control of the generals, isn't he? I mean, they're in charge here.
What do you mean in control?
He's the Deputy Secretary of Defense. That's who the generals take orders from. That's who the Joint Chiefs of Staff takes orders from. Wolfowitz and Donald Rumsfeld and the President of the United States. And all of them said, we don't need this. So, are you telling me?
Neither did Tommy Franks. Shinseki was the one who said we needed more.
That's correct. And he was attacked viciously by Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and said it was ridiculous because at the time they were trying to get political support for the war. But you know what?
Shinseki was trying to move the support away from it.
I'll tell you
he
what.
He was not there. He didn't know.
He did. Obviously, he did know, because obviously he was right. We got to go to a break, Jeff. I want to give the number out again. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And I want to get back to, I know we're always going to get into some facts, and that's fine. This show is about facts. But I want to get into the way people think. I want to get into what I think is an often religious sensibility of conservatives that America can do no wrong. But if you want to call in, please do, 877-57-SCOOP. Challenge me, challenge Jeff. You can also send an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. And we'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Job growth surges in March, blared the headlines, and what a rose-colored rush of self-congratulation ensued. George W. gloated like the boy who stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum. Economists were high-fiving each other, editorialists hailed the new boom, and you'd have thought the bluebird of happiness was singing in every backyard. But even as Bush strutted atop a made-for-TV platform that his staff had emblazoned with the slogan, Strengthening America's Economy, the whole scene had a false feel to it, eerily similar to George's strut in his Top Gun costume last year aboard that aircraft carrier that his staff had emblazoned with the declaration, Mission Accomplished in Iraq. Just as our troops are still mired in that bloody war, so are most Americans still mired in a low-wage economy that can't be fixed by presidential strut. For the powers that be to celebrate the addition of 300,000 jobs is ludicrous in an economy that has lost more than 2 million jobs since Bush took office and that continues to offshore our best-paying jobs. If you peek beneath the headlines, you'll find that the number of out-of-work Americans actually went up by 200,000 in March, and the number of underemployed, those wanting full-time work but only getting part-time jobs, was up by 300,000. Also, of the ballyhooed new jobs that Bush claims to have created in March, nearly 50,000 are not new at all. They're the jobs of California supermarket workers who had been on strike and have now returned to their old jobs. Worse, what Bush and the powers that be don't want us noticing is that nearly all of March's job creation was in low-wage, no-benefit work that cannot sustain a middle-class way of life. Indeed, despite the gloating over March's job stats, average weekly earnings went down in March. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real issue is not job numbers, but the decline in good jobs, the very lifeblood of America's middle class.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
While you can't see brilliant colors on the radio, you can use them in your business. That's why the Xerox WorkCenter M24 digital color copier printer is attractive to anyone who listens to the voice of reason. The lease price is a low $189 a month. You get brilliant Xerox color for less than 9 cents a page, plus the Xerox Total Satisfaction Guarantee. To get all the colors you can't see on the radio, do the most reasonable thing.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. And we're debating this week how conservatives think and how liberals think. And I've written a poem that has already gotten me some controversy on some email lists. And I'm debating with Jeff Meredith of the Young Americas Foundation about that poem, about how conservatives love their country and how liberals love their country. And I got an email here. He doesn't leave his name. He has his email address, so I won't say it. But it says, Mark, you're better at poetry than you are at singing. Not perfect, but well-inspired. Your guess is at least partly correct, and I say that as no conservative. It really is wrong to broad brush all conservatives as being bushies. They are not. We have big problems in this country today, and we liberals cannot solve them alone. We will need to forge alliances with some of these conservatives if we are to ever solve them. We can very well go back to a pit bull fight between liberals and conservatives when these problems are solved, but we cannot afford to fight those battles now. Thank you for your email. I'll tell you, I agree with you, first of all, that I don't want to broad brush all conservatives. Obviously, I'm talking about a stereotype. That's what you do when you write a poem, when you try to talk about a way of thinking. And yes, there are conservatives that have spoken out against George Bush, and that's very clear. Part of the problem, though, with building an alliance between liberals and conservatives, between Democrats and Republicans, is that the Republicans won't allow it. I worked as a minority counsel in the House of Representatives, and the way it works, the way you get bills passed in the House of Representatives, is there's two ways. You can either forge a broad coalition, as the writer suggests that we do, or the Republicans controlling a bare minority, which they get by gerrymandering a number of states, Florida, Pennsylvania, now Texas, and Colorado. And what they do is they have a bare majority, even if they don't have a majority in the House. So what they do, excuse me, I'm reading my emails to talk at the same time. What I'm saying is this: the Republicans have a bare majority in the House of Representatives, and they use that to basically force legislation down the Democrats' throat. George Bush ran as a uniter, not a divider, but he refuses to join with Democrats on most issues. Virtually all the time you get a partisan vote. And partly that has to do with the gerrymandering. Partly that has to do with the fact that Al Gore, for example, only won 192 of the 435 seats in Congress. He won about 42% of the districts in Congress, even while beating George Bush in the popular vote. In other words, the districts are drawn precisely to help Republicans and to hurt Democrats, and it's very hard to work together when you have that kind of system. Let me give out the number again. I know that a couple of you have written me. They've had trouble getting through. You should be able to get through now. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can go to my website at radioinsidescoop.com and send me an email from there. And again, we're talking about how liberals think and how conservatives think. And my guest is Jeff Meredith of the Young Americas Foundation. I want to ask Jeff, it seems to me, though, that there are conservatives, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, that say America right or wrong, that say that really our country can do no wrong. I assume you disagree with those conservatives.
Yeah,
or liberals.
I don't think there's too many conservatives who would say that America can do no wrong. That's why so many of us are politically active. But what we do see is an America that we consider the lone bright spot in the world, and it you know, mankind has been ravaged by one despot after another. And America has really stood as a beacon, as a bright, shining city on a hill.
But you can agree with me that what makes America strong and good is not our military, but in fact our moral values. And for that reason, criticism of America, even in its war in Vietnam, if you criticize America to keep it moral, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. The disagreement, of course, is on what is keeping America moral. And I think liberals and conservatives have a very different outlook, a world view on what really is moral or not.
We certainly do, but I'm glad you can agree with me that it's wrong to condemn the criticism. As George Bush saying, you know, that the comparing Iraq to Vietnam helps our enemies, I mean, that really doesn't help anything. He should argue the issue of whether it's like Vietnam or not, but not criticize those who suggest his policies are wrong as somehow being anti-American.
Well, I think that those people who criticize Iraq as being like Vietnam have really no clue whatsoever when it comes to comparing them. And I think that Bush is completely within his right to say you shouldn't do that, because what the criticism does is it causes the American public to be downhearted, to remember the pain of Vietnam and to think, oh, my gosh, it's happening again. And that's simply not true.
Well, first of all, I think it is true, and we can go into it. I mean, you can go detail after detail, but at the very least, don't you think if we're fighting – I mean, let's talk about a war you don't agree with. I pick any country on earth. If there's a war you don't agree with, don't you see that the fallacy of your argument, Jeff? You can always say anyone who disagrees with this war is harming our troops, is harming America. You really can't make that argument, can you?
Only if you're a complete moral relativist. I distinguish between good wars and bad wars, and I think that and I think you should too, frankly.
I do, but we should argue about the war and not question the motivations of people who challenge why we're doing what we're doing.
What if it's true that their motivation is to undercut the war?
And to undercut the war or to undercut America? What's wrong with trying to undercut a war that you find unjust and wrong and wasting money and lives? Isn't that a good thing?
Undercutting a war while it's happening, you are going to cause American death. And that's the truth of the matter.
I disagree.
And if you think that that's worth it,
Jeff,
to stop this war, then that is your choice.
I couldn't disagree with you more. Look at Vietnam. It's because of liberals. It's because of 60s radicals and hippies that we saved lives. If liberals hadn't gotten involved in the war in Vietnam, it would have continued and we would have lost tens of thousands more lives.
Well,
I would argue
Jonathan
that we saved lives.
And then and President Johnson had not started that war in the first place and turned it into a quagmire, then maybe Nixon wouldn't have had to have pulled out the troops as he did. But that being said, Vietnam, we lost an average of 5,800 men a year. Now, in almost, you know, more than a year in Iraq, we've lost 600 men. And that's terrible. Every single one of those is a human life and an individual, and that's terrible. But it's nothing like Vietnam.
Yeah, but
and frankly, if President Johnson had not, you know, micromanage the war from his desk, we would have won that war.
We would have won it, really.
A single battle.
We would have won it. How would we have won it? We would have South Vietnam would be a free democracy today, really?
Kind of like, well, South Korea?
Well, South Korea, the difference is the Korean people wanted us there. That's a big difference. The South Vietnamese, unfortunately, would rather had had so much intervention by the French and America and everyone else that they just wanted us to go. And I'm afraid that's what's happening right now in Iraq. We see the people don't want us there. They don't want us designing their flags. They don't want us controlling the government. They want to control their own government. And Bush, who claims to support democracy, claims to be giving sovereignty to Iraq on July 1st. Well, you know, it looks like we're not giving them any power, no power to send troops, no power to make laws. But my question is broader, though, than the question of whether the war in Iraq is right or wrong. My question is, I'm just and this is, I guess, where we disagree, and I'm going to go to my calls in a minute, 877-57-SCOOP. But I think that if you disagree with a war that America's fighting, that speaking out against that war is patriotic and, yes, can save lives. And I think you're saying the opposite.
You pretty much have that one wrapped up well.
Okay.
As long as we can distinguish between criticism of a war and criticism of the troops.
Well, I don't – okay. Well, let me be clear. The only troops that I would criticize and that I think John Kerry would and did criticize, whether in Vietnam or today, are the troops that are doing things like those horrible tortures and mistreatments of Iraqi prisoners in the Abu Ghraib prison, who I assume you would criticize as well. Those are the only troops I'm criticizing.
Well, I would be frustrated by that, but the reason why conservatives sometimes find liberals unpatriotic is the fact that you save all your outrage for Americans. Where was your outrage? Where was the New York Times outrage when Saddam had those U.S. soldiers executed? There was nothing there. They didn't even care.
But when
a couple of Iraqis are made to parade around naked, which is humiliating,
but
it's not torture, then it's just this outrage that comes from the liberal media.
Well,
unbelievable. First
of all, there is torture. There are rape rooms. The irony is that Bush was condemning rape rooms, and yet our troops have been raping Iraqi prisoners. It's all in General Tallulah's report. It's all there. It's all in the report that Don Rumsfeld and General Myers didn't read. But also, yes, humiliation. I mean, when you see the picture of the woman soldier holding the leash of the naked Iraqi, I mean, you're not going to defend that, I know.
You know what? I'll be honest with you. At this point in time, I don't really have a big problem with humiliation if it's used to get information out of those Iraqis that saves American lives. Well, and frankly, I don't care if a terrorist has a leash put around his neck. I don't want him
hurt.
First
of all, how do you know he was a terrorist? 60% in that prison were common criminals, people who did things like looting. Very few in that prison were high-level terrorist leaders. We don't know who those people were.
Well, you don't know that he wasn't a terrorist.
That's
either.
True. I don't. Let me go to the caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. Join the debate with Mark Levine and Jeff Meredith. What's your name and where are you from?
Hey, Don. Mark, this is Don down in Atlanta.
Hey, Don.
Hey, I want to make a couple of points about Vietnam, but then I want to get to Rumsfeld today and ask an ethical question of Jeff. First off, Jeff, the United States covertly pumped in hundreds of millions of dollars in Vietnam starting in the Eisenhower administration. Starting in really in 1954, we pumped in tons of money to the French now, trying to prop them up. And when the French couldn't hold it, Eisenhower sent in some inspectors in there, and then, of course, JFK did escalate it. He got in there. He had to accept what Eisenhower had done. He got in there, but JFK, when he was killed, only 127 Americans had lost their life in Vietnam. If you think about it, JFK, RFK, and MLK, three men who opposed that war, were all three assassinated, and what did we get? We got a war. Now, as far as Johnson, you know, it should be condemned completely for his role in Vietnam, but Richard Nixon was in Vietnam longer than we were in World War II. He did illegal bombings in Cambodia that slaughtered, according to historians, at least 1.4 million Asians on their own land illegally. So don't tell me this is a moral case of the Republicans being moral about Vietnam. But here's what I want to talk about Rumsfeld today, and that is Rumsfeld, you know, spent 4 years as Richard Nixon's special consultant. Now, you can only imagine with the dirty tricks of Richard Nixon what a special consultant might have done. Then, of course, he goes into the Reagan administration and is the special envoy into the Middle East.
And he's shaking Saddam Hussein's hand and helping get him chemical weapons to fight Iran.
Now, tell me this, Jeff. How can you be ethical if you are involved in chemical weapons that are brought there to be used and were used not only on Iranian soldiers but on Kurds and Shiites in the South after, of course, George Bush abandoned them? How can you say it's an ethical thing? Is that not a crime against humanity to take weapons of mass destruction, give them to a brutal dictator, and also doesn't it also implicate Ronald Reagan, who always claimed the buck stops with him?
I don't understand your association with Ronald Reagan at the end there.
Well, he was the commander-in-chief that sent Rumsfeld over there to deliver billions of dollars. You know, the CIA opened up.
Reagan and Bush both supported Saddam Hussein and helped him get chemical weapons.
Aren't they
implicated in his crimes?
What I'm saying is Ronald Reagan was responsible for the bug stopping there. Of course, George Bush is responsible for nothing in the White House now.
Let's give Jeff a chance to answer that.
Sent Rumsfeld over there, paving the way to deliver those weapons, just as Mark had mentioned. And how can you be an honorable person if you're supplying against all the Geneva Accords, against all international law, supplying weapons of mass destruction and chemicals to poison those people over there?
Okay, Don.
All right,
Don, let's give Jeff a chance to respond. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay, you liberals with these wild accusations, there is zero proof that America gave Saddam Hussein chemical weapons.
Wait a minute, Jeff!
I can show you a bill of lading from United Defense of Virginia.
Jeff.
Well, it's printed in Atlantic Magazine and Newsweek Magazine, where it showed under Ronald Reagan's White House was shipped from, now that's owned by Carlisle Company, another Republican crony company, but there's the actual bill of lading showing the amount of anthrax and other articles that were shipped over to him.
Actually, let me just put a call out to all my listeners. I think there's ample evidence. Just go ahead and submit it to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. We can show Jeff the specific examples of American companies supplying chemical weapons to Iraq. But
Jeff. But even the Republicans don't deny that anymore, Jeff.
No. Okay, look. America provided components of things. America armed Saddam. America did not give Saddam missiles with anthrax in them or missiles with the other chemical weapons that he used with mustard gas to wipe out the Kurds. In fact, Donald Rumsfeld warned and ordered Saddam not to use chemical weapons. Now, we did, of course, help Saddam in a war.
We also
the enemy of our enemy was our friend.
We also
just
supplied
like
him
we
with those
supported
weapons.
Joseph Stalin in World War II.
Right, but Jeff, one way we could have not worried about Iran taking over Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, all we had to do was simply sign a treaty with Iraq saying, Iran, if you invade Iraq, then you declared war also on the United States. I don't think Iran would have been foolish enough to do that, which would then give us the pretext to invade their oil fields.
Why don't you think they would have been foolish enough to do that? Saddam Hussein signed treaties too, and he didn't keep them either. I don't understand you liberals.
No, I'm saying
madmen.
If Saddam
wait,
a signed agreement since Saddam was our ally, when Iran evaded, we would have simply
hold on.
Blown them up.
Hold on, both of you. I want to understand something from Jeff. Okay, here's what I don't understand. When he's our madman. Okay, when it's to fight Iran,
right.
You support the guy, right? And we're going to show you evidence of the chemical weapons that U.S. companies provided. But one thing we do know is that within 3 months of gassing thousands of Kurds, there's Don Rumsfeld shaking his hand and making relations with Iraq. So somehow it's justified when we help torture and murder people, as we did in Iran when we supported the Shah, as we're doing in Iraq. Somehow it's okay when it's our bad guy, but it's not okay when they're against American interests. Do you believe that, Jeff?
Well, again, I believe that America has remained completely consistent through this. It was Saddam Hussein who turned on us. It wasn't us who turned on Saddam Hussein.
But he was bad throughout.
I love these...
Were you against
helping... Mark, let me
ask,
you had been president, would you have armed Joseph Stalin in World War II?
We didn't arm Joe Stalin. We were his ally.
We gave him weapons.
No, we did arm him. We gave him supplies and weapons. But of course we would in that case. But that's not the same
thing. That was a fight
That
was a fight for our survival. Remember, they attacked us.
But was it a fight for our survival if Iran invades Iraq? No, that was no fight for America's survival. They're not going to attack New York City based on that.
We had a legitimate Hitler was going to take over Europe.
But hold on, Jeff. Don't you see a bit of hypocrisy in the Republicans and supporters of the Iraq War, who now that we found the weapons of mass destruction are saying, well, the reason we had to take out Saddam is because he gassed the Kurds and he was horrible to his people when he did that with our support under Republican administrations in the 80s. I think you can agree that that argument is pretty hypocritical, isn't it, Jeff?
Well, Mark, if that was the argument, of course it would be hypocritical.
Okay,
but that is not at all the argument.
What's the argument? It doesn't really apply. Okay, what's the argument?
The argument, as I was going over earlier, is for four reasons. The treaties, the weapons, the terrorism, and finally the fourth one is the humanitarian one. The same argument that you made for us to help Sudan, which you seem to completely blow off the Iraqi lives. Maybe they're not worth as much to you.
Hey, lives. We're killing Iraqis right now. We killed 2 million people in Vietnam. I care about lives. I do think, though, there's a difference when it happened 10 years ago. You know? I mean, Saddam Hussein did nothing since 93 that any other autocratic Arab dictator has also done. Not that I support any of them.
How many dictators from the Middle East have tried to assassinate an American president?
I said since 93.
How many American presidents have tried to assassinate Middle East leaders or Castro? Or you know, Jeff, you can look at the church hearings, the Frank Church hearings, and there's been 33 known CIA coups across the world that the United States replaced people they didn't want in power. So we have a very poor history when it comes to assassination. Very poor. And attempted assassination.
Don, I need to get to another call. I
want
to thank you for calling in. You brought up a lot of great points, and I hope you'll call back.
I will.
Jeff, any response before I get to the next caller?
Again, I don't defend every single thing America has done. I think a lot of it, like with Pinochet, if you want to call – I don't know if Don was referring to that at all.
Marcos, Noriega. The list goes on and on
Noriega
and on.
Noriega declared war on America.
But we installed him first.
Well, what do you want us to do then? Bow to his feet for the rest of the time after he declared
What I'm saying is that it'd be nice if we would install democratic leaders rather than dictators, and then we wouldn't have this blowback problem.
It would be nice as well if we weren't fighting the Cold War and we could just only ally with people that were good. But the entire world does not share America's core values of freedom and democracy, and that's the result, and that's the reality, and that's why occasionally you have to help people like Marcos or Noriega.
And it's not freedom or democracy when you're installing dictators who torture their own people. Let me go to a caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Jeff Meredith.
Hi, Mark. My name's Brian from New Hampshire. Hey. I'm a former Marine. I've emailed you a number of times. I knew that too many of the young lives that were killed, 243 Marines, in October 24th, 1983 at the hands of Hezbollah and the Beirut Marine truck barracks bombing.
Right.
The Iranian mullah-led Hezbollah did that.
Right.
And then Ronald Reagan turns around and sells tons and tons of missiles and WMDs to their Iranian killers in the Iran-Contra scandal. He's trading with the enemy, Import-Export Act law violations. The guy gets away with it.
True.
We'll read about Bill Clinton in a blue dress, for God's sake. I also want to say to your young guest there that this alleged assassination attempt against George Bush in early 1993, why is it that for a month after that Marvin Bush, the president's son, former president's son and GW's younger brother, Marvin Bush, stayed on and partied it quite publicly in Kuwait City for another full month after that alleged assassination attempt by that gang that couldn't shoot straight or whatever it was? If this is nonsense, do you realize that the Karbala and Najaf and places like that, Mecca, Medina, are also part of mankind's holy land in the Middle East? And the people, what we've done to those Muslim men there in those photos, that's beneath the honor of any Marine soldier or anybody. And those private contractors, I hope Ashcroft is going to take them and really make them accountable for the crimes against humanity they committed there. You can't clean that up. And if you're a young man that's so keen on this war, are you young and able-bodied? Why aren't you have you volunteered for service?
Okay, Brian, hang on. Let me let Jeff respond because you raised a lot of good points.
All right. I guess I'll start with the last point first. You know what? No, I haven't volunteered for service.
They need bodies right now, young man.
If I was drafted, I would go, but thank God we have an all-volunteer army, and every single one of those people over there volunteered for it. Nobody was conscripted.
Hey, Brian, I got to go to a break. I want you to hang on because I don't want to give up on you, all right? Hang on.
All right.
We're going to go to a break. We're going to get back to more from Brian and from Jeff Meredith after these messages. I do want to say part of my poem was conservative leaders believe in two Americas. They don't have to fight wars. We do. But we'll get back. We'll give Jeff a chance to respond to Brian and hear more from them. And if you want to call, all you have to do is dial in 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's crunch time for SBC Communications and the Communications Workers of America. The company's 100,000-strong union-represented service and support staff may strike as early as tomorrow unless terms for a new contract can be agreed upon. The two sides are still far apart on health insurance premiums for the current workforce, as well as on issues of job outsourcing. If a strike does take place, SBC is expected to draft non-union staff and management to fill service and support jobs, including 12-hour shifts 7 days a week without overtime. That may run afoul of labor law, at least in states like California, where the rules exempt managerial and professional staff from overtime pay, provided they're engaged in their normal duties. Fixing phone lines and providing directory assistance may invoke this clause. SBC could try to get around this by petitioning the federal government for relief.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading Union Now. For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union representing teaching and research assistants have been on strike. Columbia administration officials are refusing to recognize their union. Stephen Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers, too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
Allegations of slave-like labor conditions in U.S. military camps in Iraq, this from Indian workers who returned home this month after making an escape. The workers say they were promised by a private contractor that they'd be put to work in Kuwait and didn't realize they were actually in Iraq until it was too late. Outside of mortar shelling and errant gunfire, the workers claim they were held against their will by the U.S. Army. One claims he was beaten by a soldier when he asked to go home. They also say they were paid less than a quarter of what they were promised for their work. The Indian government has formally demanded an explanation from the United States. Its ambassador to India says an investigation is now open into the charges.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study by the Environmental Integrity Project and Public Citizen found the nation's top power plant polluters are also Bush supporters. Only 5% of facilities produced 43% of sulfur dioxide, 31% of carbon dioxide, and 43% of mercury pollution. Since 1999, the 30 biggest utility companies have poured $6.6 million into the Bush presidential campaign and the Republican National Committee. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the way red America thinks. We're trying to understand conservative thinking, and I've got a live one right here with Jeff Meredith of the Young Americas Foundation, actually a friend of mine, but someone with whom I couldn't disagree more on most issues. And I've also got a caller here. He's Brian from New Hampshire, who, when we left, was basically saying that if Jeff supports the war, maybe he should sign up and go. It's a strong statement, but Jeff, you were responding.
Yes, sir. I think it's fairly insane to say that only people who support a war should be able to fight in it. Sometimes you have to roll up your sleeves and do what's best for your country. There may have been people who didn't support World War II. There may have been people who didn't support the Vietnam, who still rolled up their sleeves and went on it.
So do you think it was right for Vietnam war hawks like Dick Cheney and George W. Bush to skedaddle their way out of the front lines when John Kerry, who opposed that war, knew he was from such a rich family, he felt it was his duty still to go with it in the patrician, honorable tradition of FDR, that kind of thing, and he still goes and then he has the decency to come back and save lives by protesting that damn war.
Jeff, do you agree with me that a person who opposes a war but fights for their country anyway is a greater hero than someone who supports a war but then chooses not to fight it?
No, I don't think that your thinking influences your deeds. Deeds are what makes somebody a hero, and how you feel about your deeds doesn't change anything, in my opinion. But let me just point out as well that Bill Clinton was no war hero either. Bob Dole was, and George H.W. Bush were. And
but there's a difference. But the difference is Clinton opposed the war.
John Kerry's heroism.
Hold on. Clinton opposed the war.
Right.
And people who opposed the war and didn't want to fight it, I think there's some consistency there. But to say, particularly at a time when there's not a volunteer army, when people are being drafted, to say you support the war, you support other people dying for your cause, while you use daddy's privileges to get into the National Guard and then don't even show up for that,
right,
that's clearly not a heroic act.
Right. That's like summer vacation duty, quote unquote, you would call that, compared to regular service, and compared to what these poor people, they're reservists, the National Guards people who should be guarding our border against Al Qaeda. Instead, they're over there on regular duty because this president doesn't want to come up and say we need a draft for regular troops. He's worried about elections. Always that this Bush family tradition of always tailoring everything to elections. It's unpatriotic to the core, and I don't even think he should be using that New York City, that's a cemetery there, ground zero for their Republican convention propaganda. They should have the decency to move it to Chicago or Los Angeles, anywhere else but New York City, for God's sake. And no Democratic convention there either. After what happened there on September 11th, it was allowed to happen.
Sir, I think you're going a little loony here on us.
Hold on. Wait. We don't allow personal attacks on the show, okay? All right? You can attack his arguments, but let's
say that New York can't be used for any political thing is
that's what he's
ridiculous.
Using it for. What do you think it's going to be used for?
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Hold on. Let me ask you this, Jeff. And actually, Brian, I hope you'll listen in on Sunday because this is the topic of my show on Sunday. It really has to do with the use of dead bodies for political reasons. Bush did not want to show the coffins coming home from Iraq, but he did very much want to show the coffins of 9/11. And my question is, you know, what is it? When are such things beyond politics? I mean, what do you think, Jeff? I mean, do you think that you can do you think that Bush was right to use the coffins of 9/11 in his political campaigns?
I don't remember Bush using coffins of 9/11. I could be wrong about
no,
that.
He did.
What I remember
his
is
first
Bush
ad.
Using the backdrop of the towers knocked down.
No, his very first ad showed bodies being carried away on stretchers, and it was pretty gruesome. That was his first ad. It is kind of off the subject, though, of the way conservatives and liberals think. I want to thank you very much, though, for your call, Brian.
Thank you.
I appreciate your passion, and I hope you'll call in again.
All right.
I want to read some of my emails that I've gotten here. I've gotten a few of them. We only got a few minutes left. I got an email here from, where'd it go? From Gordon. That wasn't the one I was going to read, though. Okay, from Jim. Jim writes in Middletown, New Jersey, that as a veteran who served in Southeast Asia, I can say that people serving want to know the truth. I don't remember anyone I served with wanting the government to cover up things just to boost our morale. We wanted people to speak out against the war. The servicemen and women are not stupid. What we did not like and what we did not think was patriotic were acts such as Jane Fonda visiting the enemy and creating publicity, making them shine. Fonda is remorseful over this now. I was a fighter repairman. I remember Jane Fonda's name in vain written on the aircraft. Also, what I felt was unpatriotic is that when I came home on leave, I couldn't get a taxi ride and was mocked by civilians when I was in uniform. I was being blamed for the war when I was only serving, as I felt I should, whether I agree with the war or not. The problem is that when you're in the military, you can't speak out. But I can guarantee that there are troops in Iraq who disagree with the war. There are many fine lines in these arguments. Let me say, Jim, in New Jersey, and I'll hear from Jeff in a minute, I think you're right on. I couldn't agree with you more on everything you say. Number one, that people serving want to know the truth, that they don't want cover-ups, and many of them are against the war. Number two, Jane Fonda was dead wrong. It's one thing to criticize the war in America and say it's a bad idea, as I've said. It would be quite another thing to either defend Saddam Hussein or encourage the Iraqis killing Americans in Fallujah. No one that I know does that, and anyone that does, I agree with you, is totally wrong. And I also agree with you that it's wrong to condemn our people in the military that fight and die. Pat Tillman and others have done amazing work doing their best for a war that, unfortunately, I don't think they should have to die for, but I don't in any way take away from their courage and their strength. So I agree with you on all lines of your arguments, Jim, and I want to see if Jeff does as well.
Yeah, I think that was a very eloquent email. I think it was very well written, and I agree completely. I don't think that the military men and women are looking for a cover-up. I don't think anybody said anything like that, and I don't think anybody's rooting for a cover-up.
Well, we have the fact that when these torture allegations came out, General Myers asked 60 Minutes not to show them, asked them to delay showing them. Now,
well, the allegations, yeah.
Well, there's pictures. I mean, I should say, I mean, it's more than allegations. I mean, people admit to doing the acts. We have pictures. I mean, I don't think you doubt that these things occurred, do you, Jeff?
No. We have pictures of humiliation. I've not seen pictures of torture. Am I wrong? I've seen plenty of naked men stacked up on each other having to stand there. That's
right.
Humiliating.
Right.
That's
and
torture.
And the people and the guy standing up on the chair with the wires to his hands. Now maybe they weren't attached to electrodes. But I mean, you're not going to defend that, are you?
No, I don't defend it.
Okay.
No one is defending it. I don't understand this straw man that you're building up where conservatives are for humiliation or this nonsense.
Well, at one point I thought you said that it's okay to humiliate him if he's a terrorist.
I don't have a problem with the problem with torture. And if humiliation is what it takes to save American lives, then, frankly, it doesn't bother me that much.
Okay.
It's not a fun experience, but, you know, the men were at least wearing hoods, so they can't be identified.
Well, some were and some weren't. There's certainly that choice picture of the woman treating an Iraqi literally like a dog, which naked and with a leash, and he wasn't wearing a hood. And I think it's clear that this is going to harm us dramatically for years to come. But, Jeff, I want to thank you for putting up a spirited argument and for coming on my show.
Mark, can I make one final really quick point?
30 seconds.
And you can deal with this as you want when you get rid of me.
Okay.
I just want to point out that every one of your callers and you who called in to talk about this had nothing positive ever to say about America. And that's the reality of the situation.
Okay, and I'll respond to that, and you can listen into my response, but I want to thank you very much for being on the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Mark. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I disagree with that entirely. Maybe on this show, I'm not sure that I say anything positive about America. My theme song is The Spirit of Man. I think I say positive things about America all the time. America does a lot of great things and helps a lot of people. I do think that this administration has very much shamed America. I think he's made America look very bad in the world. Under Bill Clinton, we had America helping the poor and helping the rich, helping the people in Kosovo. We were very much looked up to all around the world. And the reason why I think that America is so strong is not because we have the strongest military on earth. The reason we have such a strong military is because the rest of the world understood that we were going to use it for good things, that after World War II, you know, we were going to protect the countries. We even had a Marshall Plan in Japan and Germany. I'm sure that Japan could develop a terrific military, but they trusted us. And that's why when we ruin that trust, when we go into the world and do these awful things, and when even Canada says, hey, don't go into Iraq, and we go in anyway, and we ignore the rest of the world, this arrogance, it not only harms our morality, our America, the America the good that I like, it also, frankly, at the end, takes away from our military power, because what it does is it allows others to challenge us militarily. As I say in my poem, liberals love their country like they love God as a source of comfort and strength. America is a source of comfort and strength. We love America, as I say in the poem. Liberals don't love America right or wrong. We love America because it is right, when it is right, when it lives up to its promise of liberty and justice for all. And sometimes America does that, and sometimes it doesn't. And when it does, I love my country just a little bit more. And when it doesn't, I love my country just a little bit less. And that, I think, is one of the big differences between the way liberals and conservatives think. Sunday, we're going to have a terrific show. It's going to be on censorship. It's going to be on what images are being shown or not shown. You may know that Disney refuses to play Michael Moore's movie. You may know the Sinclair Broadcasting Company refused to show Nightline, merely listing the names of people that have died in Iraq. Howard Stern is being stopped. There's also the censorship of coffins being shown from the Iraq War. What is it about censorship that conservatives are always defending? In the last of our look at how red America thinks, this Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 Pacific, I've got my last conservative on the hotline, and we're going to talk about censorship, control of the media, what should be shown and what shouldn't be shown. Tune in then, will you? This is Mark Levine signing off.